Happy New Year and welcome to the first Giant Splash podcast of 2020. I'm Henry Schulman, the Giants beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. My guest today is my counterpart with the Arizona Republic, Diamondbacks beat writer Nick Pecoro. We're going to talk about the bombshell 2 weeks ago that Madison Bumgarner had signed a five-year, $85 million deal to pitch in the desert. The Diamondbacks also signed one of Bumgarner's catchers, Stephen Vogt. We'll talk about that too, but without further ado, we're going to talk Bumgarner. Hi, Nick. Happy New Year, and how goes it?
Hello there, Henry. How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. I guess maybe when the season ended, the last thing you expected to do was sit in the press conference room at Chase Field and see that big fella up at the podium. I take it that this was kind of a bit of a surprise?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't think that the Diamondbacks had like a legitimate, you know, top of the rotation arm, you know, after trading Greinke in July. But it just felt like they had so many other areas to address that, you know, spending a significant amount of money on a guy like Madison Bumgarner was just kind of off the radar. But I guess when you look at the particulars of it, and you look at the dollars and who it is, you can sort of see it making a little bit more sense. You know, when especially, as I'm sure we'll get into, you know, when you're talking about a guy that seemed to really want to come here.
Yeah, and I mean, up here in San Francisco, there's a lot of angst over this, as you can imagine, and a lot of people think the Giants just, you know, if they think if the Giants had matched what the Diamondbacks had offered or even given a little bit more, he would have stayed in San Francisco, and I don't know that that's true. I mean, one of my friends, Kerry Crowley of the Merc, was actually at the press conference, and he talked to Bumgarner on the side, and he got the distinct impression that Bumgarner was ready to leave San Francisco. I mean, did you sense any of that as well?
Yeah, I didn't think he wanted to get into it too much. I asked him a question during the press conference about the difficulty in leaving, and he just kind of turned it into a quick thank you to the fans and all that. And then after, he did make it clear that Arizona was his number one choice. So I think he was ready to turn the page. I would be curious to hear what your thoughts are as to why. I can come up with a lot of reasons, obviously, with a new front office and Boach on his way out. And obviously the team is kind of, you know, had a big makeover, and what else does he have to prove in San Francisco? But I am curious, why do you think he was ready to move on?
Well, I think you touched on one part of it. I think that his loyalty is, as much as he has some loyalty to the SF on the cap, his main loyalty is to one of his best friends, who is Bruce Bochy, and also Buster Posey. And you know, Posey only has 2 years left on his deal, so if you're talking about a long term contract, Posey, you know, would be gone after a couple of years. And I think also, you know, I think he wants to win. And I think even though the Diamondbacks might not have been on the cusp of catching the Dodgers the last season or two, I think he feels that they at least have a better shot to win sooner than the Giants do. But I think the big thing might have been that even though he said he really didn't fault the Giants for never offering him an extension, I think he felt that they should have offered him an extension from that very team-friendly contract a long time ago. And, you know, the Giants are pushing the notion that they were preparing to offer him one right when he got his motorcycle into his dirt bike accident. Then they couldn't do it, and then they tried to do it. They were thinking about doing it the next year. Then he had his hand broken in the final spring training game. Then they couldn't do it, and then 2018 they had luxury tax concerns. And I think maybe to Bumgarner they feel that was all excuses. And I mean, the Giants certainly have the money to give Bumgarner more than $85 million over 5 years, especially given how much they saved by paying him, you know, just in the, you know, $50 million, $60 million range over the first what was it, 10 years of his contract. And I think there probably are some hard feelings about that. I think it'll be very, very interesting the first time he faces the Giants. I take it you'll want to work that night, not take it off.
Yes, I would also like to see that very much.
Yeah. And we, you know, we're talking about the money. I mean, 5 years and $85 million, it's a $17 million average annual value. At the winter meetings, we had heard that he was looking for five at 20 at $100 million. I always thought that was more the agent sort of putting that out there. And I'm wondering, you know, at the winter meetings, every beat writer has a time during the afternoon where they go up and talk to the general manager and the front office execs about how the day went. Did Bumgarner's name ever even come up at those meetings?
Well, we don't really get, I mean, it did come up, but Mike Hazen isn't one to speak very, very candidly about free agents.
Right.
Even in an off the record type of setting, I think we did try to ask him questions around it, but never really got anywhere. But you know, yeah, the 5 and 85. I mean, I did feel like once Zach Wheeler got his money, that probably drove Bumgarner into the 9-figure range, and I figured that when it came to the Diamondbacks, that was going to price them out. I sort of felt like if you're the Diamondbacks, you're looking at it like, hey, if I can get this guy because he really wants to come here at a discount, like let's go for it. But you know, if we're gonna have to, you know, get into the 9 figures, and we just saw how costly and how difficult it can be to navigate a roster when you have, you know, a guy like Zach Greinke who's being paid a very large chunk of a, you know, relatively mid market, even small market size payroll. It's just difficult. Probably not a thing you want to walk yourself into if you're those guys. So I don't know. I mean, Bumgarner did say, you know, he definitely left money on the table. I don't know if he left $15 million on the table because he really wanted to come here that bad. I don't feel like, I mean, I don't know him very well at all, but just listening to him talk and just kind of getting a sense for him a couple weeks ago, I don't feel like money is the biggest driver for him. And I think for the Diamondbacks, it just worked out, especially the way he was willing to structure it. I don't know if you saw this, but he's going to be making $6 million in 2020.
Right.
And the other numbers are going to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, deferring some of it, and then other numbers are going to be, you know, increasing over the last 4 years of the deal, which works out great for them because they've got a bunch of guys that are going to be hitting free agency after next season, and it just kind of works out. So it's a great move for them in that, you know, they still have money to spend to try to be competitive this year. Bumgarner, if that's really a thing that he wants to be on a winning team, you know, that he's obviously doing what he can, you know, within reason to allow that to happen. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised kind of at just about every step of the way that this ended up happening.
Yeah. And just, for the listeners, it's a 5-year, $85 million contract with an average annual value of $17 million. Like Nick says, he's going to get $6 million this year. He's deferring some money. So the present day value of the deal, which is what the union uses to actually peg the deal, I believe is somewhere around $81 million. He's actually going to do this with no interest. So, you know, he must really like the horse facilities in Arizona. I'm wondering, have you ever recalled, and how many years have you been on the beat now?
12, 13.
12, 13. Like, have you ever remember a free agent citing a place to park his horses except for wanting to come to Arizona?
I do remember Troy Gloss steering himself here because his wife was some kind of an equestrian writer. So I do remember that, but I can't think of anything to this extent. I'm curious to see he's a North Carolina guy. That's home. I'm curious to see what he does to make this home. If he's gonna actually, you know, buy a place, live out here a lot of the year, bring a lot of his horses out, even more than he would in spring training. I'm curious to see how much he makes this place, a second home.
Yeah, the real estate prices are a little better down there than they are in San Francisco. Actually, Matt Cain's wife is I believe is an equestrian as well, and Jeremy Affeldt. So, they all should have ended up in Arizona. I did want to ask one more thing. About the money, how do the Diamondbacks view the back end of this deal? I mean, here's a guy, he's turning 30. He just turned 30. So he's going to be about 33, 34 years old at the end of the deal. And his velocity has declined. He's not exactly the pitcher he was during his glory days. Still pretty good. How do the Diamondbacks view, you know, that fourth and fifth year in terms of the investment that they're making, what they think they might be able to get out of them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I do feel like they believe that there are some adjustments that can be made. And I think that, you know, they just hired Matt Hergis as their pitching coach, and he spent, the last 2 years as the Giants' bullpen coach. So he brought a lot of kind of firsthand knowledge about Bumgarner and about Bumgarner's willingness to begin working with analytics last year and kind of understand what could be gained from things like edgertronic cameras and the spin rates on his pitches and things like that. I feel like they believe that maybe they're just scratching the surface on that, and that, you know, they're getting a guy that's open-minded and competitive. And, you know, I think, like, when you look at some of the greats, as long as they can stay healthy, the decline tends to be a little bit less jagged, right? I think that they're hoping that at least by the end, maybe they're looking at a, you know, sort of the last few years of CC Sabathia's time.
Right.
That just the guy that at least can take the ball, show some flashes of greatness from time to time, but generally just be a kind of stable force in the rotation.
Yeah, and you know, I did read one story, I believe it was in Fangraphs, or it might have been actually a tweet by a Fangraphs writer who said that that he had one of the best spin rate improvements in 2019 among starting pitchers, and I think that, you know, they do work on that a little bit in San Francisco. It hasn't been as big a thing as it will be under the, you know, Farhan Zaidi and the new coaching staff. But, you know, I think Bumgarner is a little more savvy than he makes out to be, a lot more savvy than he makes out to be. I mean, everybody thinks of him as this sort of bumpkin who came right out of high school and went to professional baseball, but he's a very, very intelligent guy. And I was going to ask about her just as well. I think that was, I think that's a super hire. I mean, one of the best aspects of the Giants the last couple of years was their bullpen. And in fact, that's what the Giants ended up trading away to get some of the pieces for the future. But as for the Diamondbacks, does he slot in as the number one right away? I mean, is it Robbie Ray? Are they going to move Robbie Ray?
I would be surprised if Bumgarner isn't starting on opening day. And yeah, they might move Robbie Ray. I think that's a little bit TBD. They have some depth in the rotation. It's not the, you know, highest upside depth probably. I mean, at the last couple of spots were occupied by, you know, Mike Leake and Merrill Kelly, who are kind of similar pitchers. I'm sure most people know about Mike Leake. Just kind of the, you know, take the ball every 5 days and probably end up with a little bit worse than league average ERA, but you know, eight innings. So, I mean, I think that having Robbie Ray in the rotation gives them a little bit more upside. And if they're, you know, really gunning for it this year, keeping him would probably benefit them. But, you know, they've tried to stay a bit ahead of some of those things. The Paul Goldschmidt trade as probably the primary example. And if they can get some value for him before he hits free agency, if it's the right value, I think that they'd be willing to do so. I mean, they're always trying to, you know, the proverbial balancing the present with the future.
Well, if the season were to open tomorrow, what do you think the rotation would be, 1 through 5 or 1 through 4?
I think it would be Bumgarner, Ray, assuming he's healthy, Luke Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Gallen, who they traded for from the Marlins and was terrific after coming over at the deadline, would probably be the 4, and then I would think Mike Leake would be the 5.
Okay, and the number 3 there, just so people know, Weaver, he's the guy that the Diamondbacks got as part of the Paul Goldschmidt trade. I would say he was probably the centerpiece of the Paul Goldschmidt trade.
It's hard to say. Carson Kelly was maybe that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, both of them came over. But Weaver, I mean, you probably remember Luke Weaver walking off the mound in San Francisco in May with an elbow thing.
Right.
He only made one appearance after that. So, yeah, I mean, he was very good for them the first, I think he made 10, 12 starts and pitched terrific, but didn't come back. And like I said, he threw one inning at the end. So he did come back, but it was limited. So I think his health is a real question, thing to watch in spring.
I think. I think you also lost about 500 listeners as soon as you mentioned the name Mike Leake, because they all just threw their iPhones at the wall. The Giants traded for him mid-year 2015. hoping that he could help them get to the playoffs, and he got hurt. He was terrible, and they ended up giving up Adam Duvall. And even though Adam Duvall has kind of proven himself to be sort of a fringe major league player, you know, people here think he could have been a 40 homer guy if he stayed in San Francisco. Are you looking forward just as a beat writer to working, you know, with Bumgarner and just you know, just watching him on the mound, talking to him, just kind of trying to get a sense of who he is?
Yes, for sure. I mean, I think that you know, from afar, you see his competitiveness, and I mean, you know, obviously there's times when you kind of roll your eyes at some of the stuff that he did over the years, barking at players. But then you hear what people say about him off the field, and you kind of get a sense for what he's like as a person. I'm really looking forward to being around him on a regular basis, because I've heard nothing but good things about him in the clubhouse. And I've heard nothing but good things about him from you guys, from the other writers that have been around him over the years. So yeah, I'm also interested in, you know, like you're saying, like just that maybe the reputation of him isn't quite there. I'm excited to kind of see how that plays out.
Okay, well, one of his battery mates from San Francisco the last year is going to be joining him. We'll talk about that, but we're going to take a break first, and we'll be back with Nick Vaccaro right after this. Welcome back to the Giant Splash. I'm talking to Nick Vaccaro, the Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic. We spent a lot of time talking about Madison Bumgarner, and he's going to be throwing to Stephen Vogt. And as much as the Giants fans are unhappy with the fact that they've lost Bumgarner, a lot of them are unhappy that they lost Vogt as well. He was just there for a year. Very, very popular guy in the clubhouse. A good left-handed hitter, maybe not so much as good a defensive player as Buster Posey was. Why did the Diamondbacks go after Stephen Vogt?
I think mainly it's what you mentioned with the bat. I think that they saw him as a guy that certainly when they were facing him gave or put together really good competitive at bats night after night, and I think that they respected that. And I think that, you know, they see him as a way to just sort of incrementally upgrade their offense. And look, they're not going into the year thinking that Stephen Vogt's going to give them 400 at-bats. Although he you know, they did mention that they'd be comfortable with him in certain situations, standing out in left field or you know, coming into a game late in a game and playing some first base or getting a start at first base or whatever it might be. I don't think they're planning to, you know, overexpose his versatility. But they just felt like there were some areas on their bench that they were giving some at-bats to guys that weren't really giving them as competitive of at-bats as they envisioned Vogt being able to give them. And on top of that, you know, they raved about everything that they've heard about him from a makeup perspective, personality perspective, and they think he's going to fit in really well in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he's actually an incredible guy, and one thing that might be of interest to you and any Diamondbacks fans that are listening, you know, Bumgarner had always had Buster Posey as almost like a personal catcher because, you know, they have been together for so long. And we all thought it was a big story when Bumgarner had to pitch to Vogt. And then it actually worked out pretty well. Like I said, he's not the best defensive catcher in the world, but he acquitted himself well, and he calls a really good game. And so I imagine that Kelly is the starting catcher. Is that
yeah.
What? Yeah. Okay. You know, just from a clubhouse perspective, I'm just wondering what the Diamondbacks clubhouse has been like and whether they felt the need for a guy like that, you know, just a kind of a glue guy.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's been an issue. I think it's been a really good group of guys. And I think that they would cite that as a reason why they've been able to surprise over the last couple of years. I just think they see him as being a guy that would fit really well. I mean, the other thing is he's left-handed. Carson Kelly's right-handed. And I don't think they love the idea of having, you know, personalized catchers. And I think they like the idea of staying flexible and being able to match up. So that's another thing that allows them to do.
Right. And he, you know, he won't kill you in left field. I mean, he's obviously not an outfielder, but he won't kill you out there. Speaking of the outfield, the Diamondbacks also got a an outfielder I thought the Giants might look at, Cole Calhoun. He is a left-handed hitter, and that might have been one of the reasons the Giants stayed away, because the Giants are very left-handed. Why did the Diamondbacks see the need, or where did they see the need for Cole Calhoun?
Yeah, well, they went into last year thinking that Steven Souza was going to be their right fielder. A couple days before the season started, I think it was the second to last exhibition game, he slipped on home plate, crossing home plate at Chase Field, and tore everything up in his knee. Just a devastating, awful, gruesome injury. Needed major surgery. Season was over, and they wound up giving Adam Jones the bulk of the time in right field. He was fine. I mean, he had some big hits for them and had his moments, but just kind of fell apart in July and August, and they just needed an answer there in right field. And Calhoun, I guess, is that guy. He does something that the Diamondbacks value tremendously, and that's plays defense very well. I think that we've seen over the last few years with Torrey Lovello that there can be guys that will have, you know, multi-hit games, but make a mistake at a position, and the next day aren't in the lineup. He really, really values defense. He really thinks that's an important part of winning baseball games. And Calhoun has a tremendous reputation as a defender. Another guy like Bumgarner really, really wanted to come here. He's from Buckeye out in the West Valley.
Right.
He went to Arizona State. He actually becomes the third guy, along with Mike Leake and Merrill Kelly, the third Sun Devil on the Diamondbacks roster, which they haven't had too many ASU players over the years, but suddenly they have three in the room. I think he's got some power, obviously. Not a ton. I mean, he hit 30 home runs last year, but everybody hit 30 home runs. He's, I think, averaged, 20 homers over the last five mm-hmm. years. So, I mean, he seems like a solid pickup. I don't think he's a game-changing middle-of-the-order type of acquisition, but I think he'll do some things that can help them win.
And, you know, you mentioned Souza. He is a free agent. He is a right-handed hitter. He's a guy that could probably be acquired, at a bargain rate or at least a contract with a lot of incentives given his injury. I do think the Giants are looking at him. I also remember that he got injured in, I think, his first year with when he first started playing with the Diamondbacks. He hurt his pec, I think, making a dive in the outfield in the spring training stadium. If the Giants were to get Steve Souza and he were a healthy player or becomes a healthy player, what would they get?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, he got hurt in spring training his first year with the Diamondbacks, and at the very end of spring training his second year, so I never really got to see him at his best. Now, when they acquired him, they saw him as a guy that could do a little bit of everything really well. They saw him as an excellent outfielder, an excellent defender, rangy, fast, good jumps, maybe some over-aggressive routes at times, but always scored well in the defensive metrics, if memory serves. He has a good arm, is a patient hitter, grinds out at bats. I think he had just hit 30 home runs in 2017 for the first time. He's had trouble staying healthy throughout his career. He had a hip thing. I'm forgetting the other injuries he had in Tampa, but he has had some things pop up over the years, so that's a question with him. But, you know, they felt like that was a guy at the time that was just kind of coming into his own, and, you know, it didn't work out that way. The risk, obviously, is just how much, you know, he's had a full year off last year and played sparingly, probably only about half of the season in 2018. The question is how much, you know, all that downtime is going to have an effect on his ability to kind of step right in and produce in 2020. He's a great guy. Very outgoing, fun to be around, a good sense of humor. So he'd be a good guy for you guys to cover. I'm sure you'd enjoy dealing with him. I'm hoping for a bounce back from him. He's a good dude.
Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, the Giants really haven't done much of anything on the major league side so far. Well, just to wrap up, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, as fans in the National League West, who follow the National League West, know, the Dodgers have won 7 straight division titles. They're a perennial 95 to 100 win team. There's no reason to think they won't again. Where do the Diamondbacks see themselves in the race for 2020?
Yeah, I mean, they always acknowledge that. They always acknowledge that the Dodgers are the cream of the crop, and that they're, you know, they have ground to make up. I think that they probably realistically see themselves as a wild card contender, or, you know, if a lot of things go really right for them, and, you know, a key injury or two hits the Dodgers that they can't really overcome, you know, maybe they're contending. But I think they realize that probably the most realistic outcome is them contending for a wild card spot.
Okay. Well, I look forward to the Sedona red uniforms, which we'll see in the spring training, I'm sure. I'm not looking forward to the gray uniforms that look like they all jumped into
the pool. They cleaned them up. They got rid of those.
Oh, they did. Oh, well, boy.
Yes. This,
boy,
yes.
We buried the lead in this podcast. No, no more of those gray uniforms, huh?
No, they got rid of those, and they cleaned up some of that. I don't know, the garbage they have on the shoulders and the gradient, I think they were calling it. I think it looks a lot cleaner and a lot nicer.
Good. Well, thanks a lot, Nick. I look forward to seeing you in spring training.
All right, see you, Hank.
Thank you for listening to the very first Giants Flash podcast of 2020. We hope to bring you a lot more great content as we move toward the baseball season.
Giant Splash is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is editor-in-chief. Follow me on Twitter at Hank Shulman, or you can email me at hshulman@sfchronicle.com. Support Giant Splash and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions available. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.